Frank, you want to talk some about outreach?
Yeah. First, I wanted to follow up on a disclaimer about a comment that Candace made regarding our having stolen the some aspects of the comprehensive gang model.
Did I say we stole it?
Well, I like to say we co-authored some of that stuff, so we were involved on the front end. Yeah, also this team that she talked about in Baltimore, we're about to go in there next week, actually, and do the training of the fourth site. So they're expanding into a fourth site in that city. You know, you heard Gary talking about the violence interrupters and the work that the outreach workers do out on the street. But I guess one of the most important things that we have to do, I'm a social worker by trade, but beyond that point is we have to be able to get people who can reach that population. We have to get people who that population can look at and say clearly, what I'm smelling, those guys have eaten. So I can relate when they can relate to me. We call that credible messengers. That's what our workers are, credible messengers. With that, of course, they have backgrounds. A good deal of these guys have been involved in the nonsense that's taken place today in their communities in a prior history. Many of them are former influentials of some of those mobs that we're working with. Many of them have X's on their backs, they're criminal, they're ex-felons. However, they've made that transition to be able to say the nonsense that's going on today in the community that I'm working in, I help create that. So it's going to be people like me to help fix that problem. So we get what you call credible messengers. So many people would say, well, what kind of safeguards do you put in play, because sometimes things happen. People relapse, as in any other thing, right? Alcoholics, drug addicts, they relapse. There's problems. So sometimes that occurs. We're not perfect, but we're damn near, I like to say, because we have some safeguards in place where we try to make sure that, in fact, these individuals have stayed on that side of the line, on our side of the line. As Candace alluded to, we do background checks prior to coming on board. We do periodic background checks just in case they've slipped. We want to know about that. We don't want to have a surprise coming regarding that. We'll hire, what I say, and forgive me because sometimes I go raw, but we hire everybody and they mammy, all right? Basically what I'm saying, we've hired guys who've done 30 calendars in prison for a gang homicide or so forth. However, there's certain individuals we won't hire, all right? There's two type of individuals we won't hire, and that is basically anyone who's committed a crime against a woman or a child, all right? Any other crime, basically, maybe we can deal with, but that kind of thing, that kind of background, even in the code of conduct of the criminal law community, that kind of conduct isn't acceptable. So we don't hire that kind of individual. Are there any questions related to that anybody would like to ask me? Yes, sir.
Can you tell us a little bit more how you measure or evaluate the credibility of their transition, the person who you're convinced has made this personal transition?
Sure. Sure. There are certain things that we look out for, like we won't hire you if you just got recently released from prison. You usually have to be out at least 12 months. It's not an individual hiring process, as Candace alluded to again. It's a panel that sits down, that you sit in front of. The panel would be made of somebody from the project, myself in most cases, a partner agency, somebody from clergy. Also law enforcement sits on that panel. And we come to a decision as a group on that individual. Works pretty well. But again, for the most part, you really have to hear the individual out and also listen to other players who may already be on the project who are looking out for the best interests of the project. Because a lot of the guys that we hire, they really take this thing to heart that they're doing something positive. They're paying back for a lot of the dirt they created, so they don't want nobody else messing it up for everybody else who's coming behind. We've got this reputation coming out of the prison system where the guys in prison, which is usually unheard of, are talking about, you know, a program like this, that this is a good program, get involved with it, and don't mess it up. Because if you mess it up, you mess it up for everybody else who comes behind. So a lot of the stuff we get on the individual comes directly from the streets, comes directly from the staff. By the way, if we do have some problem staff, guess who's the first ones to let us know that we have some problem staff? Usually the streets, the guys involved in the life, because as we'll go on, we'll talk about some of the stuff or the relationships that we create by being involved in their life. You know, these credible messengers, you get to be credible messengers because you're from the hood. You've been there. You've done that. You haven't necessarily left the hood and moved over to Happy Heavens. You still live in the hood, except you're on a different level now. You're not involved in the violence. You will not have anything to do with the violence, and you're trying to prevent or intervene in potential violent situations.
Do you want to talk just a minute about the training?
The training basically is an extensive thing. Prior to when you come on board, you spend a total of 6 days with us. We spend something like 2.5 days at the University of Illinois School of Public Health, and then we spend 3.5 days out on the streets at different sites. What I like to do is I like to mix them up because there are different communities that have problems. In the city of Chicago, if you know anything about Chicago, we call it cultural identity. We still suffer from some of the greatest racism in the country, you know. You got the blacks living with the blacks. You got the Mexicans living with the Mexicans. You got the Puerto Ricans living with the Puerto Ricans. Hell, even the Caucasians are segregated. You got Italian heaven, Polish heaven. You know, you got these different ethnic Caucasians races. So in Chicago, we take them out to different neighborhoods on those 3.5 nights. They may spend one night in a black neighborhood, one night in a Mexican-American community, another night in a Puerto Rican community, because contrary to what people think, all Hispanics ain't the same. There are some differences, okay? So they'll spend 6 days initially with us, and then at least 2 hours per month on follow-up booster trainings, where we will discuss a variety of the issues. Anything, as I said, I'm a social worker, so anything around psychosocial human services, crisis intervention, anger management, domestic violence, you name it, we try to deal on those various issues, as well as any problems that are coming up that pertain specifically to that site. All right. The duties, basically the duties involved, you know, sure. Sure. Yeah, one of the most important things that I tell everybody on the forefront is the individual worker's safety. I will not put a worker at safe. If there's some issue with that worker being somewhere, then I've got to think about that at the front end, at the hiring process. If, in fact, has he actually made the transition? If, in fact, he has made the transition, but there's maybe some, you know, still, you know, he's still skeptical, he still might be concerned, I may be apprehensive about putting him anywhere by themselves. Maybe I'll team him up with another worker from that area until that person gets comfortable. But if in fact, you know, there's a real danger or fear, then I've got to think that out in the front end and say, you know, has he really crossed that line and put the project at risk of hiring somebody like that? I got to be real careful with that, because not only we use the word infiltrate, I don't want anybody infiltrating the project, but at the same time, I got to be concerned about people's safety. And knock on wood, to this day, me and Candace have been doing this for so many years, we actually get the opposite rather than what people think. You know, a lot of people think that kind of work, working till 2 o'clock in the morning, whatnot, aren't you in danger and whatnot? And what we're finding is actually the opposite. The guys who are involved in the life actually protect the workers, are looking out for the workers and whatnot. So, you know, I've got to keep that in mind as I train these guys and as I bring them on board.
We've also found that in some of those instances that we treated that as a conflict that we need to mediate and actually gone out and talked with some of the folks that might not be comfortable with this person coming on and doing the work and explained what they're doing and why they're doing it and what we're trying to do and, you know, and have had some success in giving them a greater latitude in terms of making sure that they can fulfill their duties.
Sure.
Slowly. It's, you know, we're in 16 or 17 neighborhoods in the city right now. We started in one. And we were fortunate that, you know, we started in a couple of beats that had the highest rate of shootings, you know, in Coolings, we think, in the country, really. So we started in a very, very hot spot. And we were fortunate that we were, at that time, working with some police officers on the ground who have actually gone up through the ranks. And today is the deputy chief, the person that we started the most, the closest relationship there. So it's really a question of a one-on-one, building the relationships, and then over time, as people kind of move to other jobs. In Chicago, you seem to be moving in the police department every 6 months or so, folks kind of move around. And so while it's very frustrating to us that we have to build new relationships, you know, we're always explaining, we're always talking about what we're doing, we're always asking for feedback. We always want to know if they think that one of our workers is doing something that they shouldn't be doing, we want to know that. Frank gets those calls, I get those calls. And we either explain why they were out there and why they saw them with the people that they saw them with and that they were actually doing their job. They were actually in ceasefire T-shirts and they had, you know, proper ID, which is why they knew who they were. You know, they recognized them. We had an instance where one of our workers was coming to, we have an annual breakfast, and the superintendent was at the event. And, you know, in walks this fellow that he had put in prison some years ago, and he's like, I heard you were out. I didn't know you were working for ceasefire, you know. And they chatted a little bit. It wasn't the most comfortable conversation, but I think that, you know, they each appreciated that they had a job to do, and they were about doing that work. So have we persuaded all 13,000 police officers that we're there, we're doing a good job? No, absolutely not. Probably of the 13,000, my guess is, you know, 8 or 10,000 don't even know who we are. But, you know, we're making slow inroads to the point now where the deputy chief has called together commanders and said, look, these guys are out there. They're doing a job that really helps us. And you should trust them. And you should at least give them a chance. Now, if we mess up, it's on us.
Yeah. It's a double-edged.
And sometimes we do. You know, we're not perfect.
It's a double-edged sword. You know, you'll have those guys who, no matter what we do, you know, you're hiring a bunch of ex-felons, ex-gang. They're just contributing to the problem. But then you'll have those guys who say, you know what, we can't arrest our way out of this situation. We need some help. You know, law enforcement, traditionally, they come in and they, the analogy I use is they pick up some, you know, when it's broken already. We try to get in at the front end before it gets broke, do something about it and so forth. So, I mean, we will never satisfy everybody. There's going to always be that suspicion, you know, just like there's going to be suspicion on our part, you know, that all law enforcement is corrupt and no good when we, in fact, know that that's not the case, you know. So to answer your question, it's a double-edged sword.
We build trust with the police the same way we build trust with clients. You know, it takes time. And, you know, people will test you, and you either succeed or fail. Hopefully you have enough successes so that when you have a setback, there's enough of a reserve there to be able to come back and continue on with the work. But it's slow. You know, we have to show that we're out there doing the right thing, doing the work that we say we were going to do, and start building that credibility with law enforcement. You know, it's a very slow process. But we've been very fortunate that we've built a lot of credibility with people who have subsequently been in influential positions in the department, and they've then helped us as we've moved forward. And, you know, and this really happens by contact. It's by seeing us, by talking to us. And when I say us at this point, I'm really meaning at the community level, that they're talking to whoever is the program manager for the site. They tend not to have a lot of face-to-face contact with outreach workers or interrupters on the street. And when they do, we ask that they interact with them in the same way they would any other person. They get no special privilege, no special favors. The last thing we want to do is put our workers in jeopardy by them being thought to be a snitch or overly identified with law enforcement. They're not informants. They're not snitches. They're not collecting information so that they can hand it off to the police. There. Yes, ma'am.
Yes, I'm wondering along those lines, how do you deal with confidentiality and information that the street workers, the people doing the work and law enforcement, so they're still trying to maintain their community, but the law enforcement isn't trying to sneak
in? Frank, you want to answer that?
There is no. I mean, the workers are not. We're not the eyes and ears of the police. That's not their job. Our job is to get at the front end to try to intervene in something. As Tim alluded to earlier, everything that we do in terms of documentation, when we write stuff down, I mean, we won't use a person's name. We'll use an identifier, a number, and so forth. And only the site director or the manager and the line staff or the outreach workers will know who that number goes to. In writing down case notes, you know, there's certain language that we don't want to write down that may incriminate. As you know, files can be subpoenaed in court and whatnot. So we really have to be real careful because the population that we're working with, the individuals that we're working with, these are the individuals involved in that kind of life. If, in fact, it ever got out that we had anything to do with, rather than helping them stop stuff at the front end, but incarcerating or getting people locked up, there goes our credibility, there goes all the work that we've done over the years, and we will not be accepted by that community and so forth. So there are precautions that we take in the documentation, in the someone's identity from being put out there, confidentiality. It's tough, but there's a lot of stuff that we have to put in place because some of you will say, well, why didn't you help solve that homicide? Well, if we help solve that homicide, we may not be able to prevent the 50 that we're going to come behind. So you do the number. Which one are you going to do? So we got to be real careful with that. And that might sound raw to you and those of you who are social workers and stuff, but the reality is that we're living in some times and some communities, as you all know, that they don't abide by the same rules. They do not, and we have to work from within that community and make changes from within that community to be able to get somewhere.
I want to keep us moving, so at least finish this and then get it up to the rest of the questions. We really use community mobilization as a way of calling attention to the problem in the community and bringing people into our network, our ceasefire family, in effect. And one of the things that we do is make a big deal about every shooting or killing that takes place in one of our neighborhoods. So we have a response on the site of the incident and call attention to the fact that this is not acceptable, this is not the norm in our community, this isn't what we do. These are not opportunities to eulogize the death of someone. This is an opportunity to talk about the fact that a shooting or killing diminishes everyone. So whether it's a gang member or it's a 7-year-old child, we talk about the fact that it's a loss to us all. We have public outcry. We do a lot of marching. We do different types of events and activities to call attention to what we're doing. And a lot of the activities we're also thinking as ways not only to kind of preach the message and put our message out there, but also opportunities for community building, collective efficacy, connecting people with one another, giving people a chance to see who their neighbors are and see that there are a lot of other people that are concerned about this issue and to have some fun. You know, there are alternatives to doing other things on, you know, days, evenings, weekends. I should add that we've, as part of our community mobilization, we try to work closely with faith leaders. We've had mixed success with that. We do very well in some neighborhoods and not as well in others. Sort of the nature of someone's, calling, I guess, in terms of some of the churches are more actively involved or some of our local faith leaders are more actively involved. All of this is supported by massive public education messaging, getting the word out, what we're doing, why we're doing it, and we try, as we've talked repeatedly, about having messengers that can connect with different audiences. So we have different people that are actually speaking to groups at whole kinds of different times. Lots of different stuff that's out there.